Welcome to Overthinking It, where we subject the popular culture to a level of scrutiny it probably doesn't deserve. We are recapping Community Season 5, Episode 11, G.I. Jeff. I'm Matt, and that's Ryan. Hi, Ryan!
Oh, sorry, Matt. I was in a childhood delusion, ignoring the reality of my own aging and mortality. So thank you for bringing me back to the real reality from the cartoon reality, rocketing upwards through the commercial reality back to us. And so I'm happy to join you here on this recap.
Rocketing straight upwards through the tube of
of commercialization.
Yeah, exactly. I should have done it. We should have had code names, right? Like I don't know.
Oh yeah.
I'm EarPods.
I feel like you are you just are pedant, right? Like and
yeah, absolutely.
And I'm hard target because I jump around a lot.
So this was the episode of Community that was the G.I. Joe episode.
It was awesome. I mean, I know this isn't a review recap.
Keep your opinions to yourself, soldier. No one has ever given an opinion on Overthinking It in more than 6 years of having the site.
I know. How dare I actually like something? No, I mean, this actually builds in some ways on the last Community episode where you guys talked a little. You and Mark discussed the Dungeons and Dragons, the second Dungeons and Dragons episode, and you guys talked a little bit about your engagement with Dungeons and Dragons. And so maybe just one place to lead in before we kind of parse a little bit is that there's still buckets of G.I. Joes in my parents' home in Pennsylvania. And they were played with within the last 5 to 7 years, most recently, when my brother and I, or it was either my brother or my a good friend of mine from high school, and we were like kind of bored on a around a Christmas time, got the G.I. Joes out, and then got out the board game Crossfire, the one with the guns and the ball bearings, and set up the G.I. Joes on the Crossfire, and fired the Crossfire balls at each other's G.I. Joes. And I think that's really kind of will be an appropriate thing to return to as we actually dig into the meat of the episode.
Was there was there strategy involved, or was it just like, was it like playing Mousetrap without the rules and just setting up the game?
Well, it's, you know, the German military historian and theorist Karl von Clausewitz talks about the concept of the fog of war, right? And you can lay out strategy, you can lay out rules, but once the ball bearings start flying, there's just what Clausewitz referred to as friction, and it makes all plans go out the window, and you achieve a state of total war. So we achieved total war. And we got caught up in the crossfire.
Survives contact with the tiny plastic enemy, what you're saying.
Exactly. So Matt, did you play with G.I. Joes?
I watched the G.I. Joe cartoon. It was like my second or third choice if there was no She-Ra Princess of Power and no Sky Commanders on, because I was an effete young child. And Sky Commanders, by the way, I've talked about on the podcast before, but they were another line of toys. But they were like G.I. Joes, except they all lived in a canyon, in like bases, hanging off the wall of a canyon. They had backpacks. The backpacks shot zip lines out forward and back, attaching to various rock formations in the canyon so that they could zip line back and forth in order to traverse the canyon and, you know, fire. Now, this is a terrible idea because it leaves you extraordinarily vulnerable. All anyone has to do is stand at the edge of the canyon and like snip the rope when the anchors fire and attack.
I guess in the TV show, that's every conflict is somebody has who snipped my rope this week.
So those were the toys that I had. And I also played with wooden blocks a lot. So I didn't have G.I. Joes, but I watched the cartoon.
You watched the episodic commercial for G.I. Joe's, right?
But I mean, a lot of those, right? And a lot of shows were episodic commercials, and a lot of them were actually financed by Hasbro. Like, I'm thinking of like Transformers, He-Man, the He-Man continuity. They were all
the He-Man extended universe.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So
and I think this is important, right? And it's there in when Abed, or in his G.I. Joe persona, Fourth Wall, is explaining what needs to happen later in the episode for Jeff. Right. So I mean, just as the way of framing, this episode opens in G.I. Joe land, and as the episode goes on, and it is a G.I. Joe world inhabited in part by our Greendale crew, and the voices and likenesses of the Greendale crew. As it goes on, it becomes clear that this is a, rather than being an Abed delusion, as a lot of our other, you know, as the claymation was. This is a Jeff delusion, and you get the cartoon is punctuated by live action commercials that are also directly modeled on the G.I. Joe commercials of that time as well. And Fourth Wall says, you know, something's going on in, there's a real reality out there, and we need to get you, Wingman, which is Jeff's G.I. Joe persona, out of there, and he's using an accessory, using a jetpack accessory. He needs to be rocketed from the cartoon reality through the childlike play commercial reality back to reality. And I think that is really, you know, it's really, I think that sets out, like, in some ways, you know, a lot of these community episodes, as we've been talking about this season, they set up, you know, what the kind of, what the genre exercise or the game, you know, how it, there's usually a lot of clarity with how it relates to, you know, a larger point. But this is amazing, because there's really a diagram here, because it was around at that point where I actually wrote in my notes, this is effing awesome. I don't know what our language requirement on these video podcasts are, so I'm going to err on the side of this is, knowing that this is not the TFT podcast. So I wrote that it was effing awesome, but you know what I really wrote. And I thought about why it's effing awesome, and it's because, you know, I have these attachments to this, you know, because the G.I. Joe show is not good in any way. And you know, that's what a lot of this is making fun of. And yet, because we were exposed to it at the, you know, sometime between the ages of 5 and 10, and bought things, whether it was the specific G.I. Joes or things like them, that then incorporated into our own process of play and exploration and imagination, these two things became then very much fused into, like, some part of who we are, into a reality. And then what's very cool is, so there's this sandwich of cartoon commercial reality, and reality, as Abed says, is community reality. And then all of those then are, as we are watching this, are overlaid, because there is a commercial cartoon and community in that, right? And because this is, you know, a lot of other times when you get a pop culture property on community, it's a lightly veiled version of a real thing. It's Kick Puncher, right? It's Meow Meow Beans. But this is real G.I. Joe, means there's real licensing, meaning this is a real commercial. This is Lego Movie territory. And it reminded me a lot of the discussion you guys had on the Overthinking It podcast about the Lego Movie, in that it is a long commercial that is making, you know, on the one hand, means that, you know, the Lego people are on board and is telling you something about Legos, but it is also a interesting work of art in its own right, right? And so I think that, you know, and I think that taking those together is really awesome, because a lot of the point about the of the episode is about coming to terms with getting older and how, you know, self, how you preserve a sense of self and what the options are in that, and how you relate to youth and kind of the, you know, perceived freedom or timelessness of youth. And so it's really both at the same time irreverent and silly and funny. And like, I think especially because it's like dealing with, you know, specifically like masculine aging, right? Like we are the target demographic, you know, guys, you know,
mid-30s, like we're staring it right down, you know.
And it's really amazing, like the one of the during the commercial breaks in the telecast that I watched it live on NBC, and one of the ads and it only really became apparent as we reached the end of this episode, one of the ads was an ad for Fiber One bars that featured dudes singing Total Eclipse of the Heart about really wishing they could have a delicious snack even though they have to eat healthily, and just being so happy that the thing that they could eat are Fiber One bars. And there we are, here you and I are marching inexorably away from G.I. Joe's towards Fiber One bars, and we're at this space, this liminal space between G.I. Joe and Fiber One is where we are.
Right. So I want to talk about a couple things about what you said, right? Like, I think the interesting thing to me was that it's not just aging, but the way that he copes with aging is by recovering like a childlike fantasy of what masculinity is, right? And what, like, you know, and it's almost like a time when you had sort of simpler problems, right? Like you wanted to see, like G.I. Joe, like the G.I. Joe say, what do boobs look like? You know? And it's this sort of posturing, swaggering, ultra macho model of masculinity that's fantasized as being like perfectly safe. You know what I mean? Like there's no anxiety about aging because there's no death.
Right. Exactly. When the rupture in the G.I. Joe world is when Jeff kills and when Wingman kills Destro. And this is this like rift in the G.I. Joe universe, that sets into effect the chain of events that are like the plot, the notional plot of the episode. And right. So it's the introduction of death, of reality, into this fantasy world.
Penetrates this sort of fantasy macho masculine Eden of the cartoon, and also the like the real life kind of childhood Eden of the backyard, right?
Right.
And the second commercial, the one for G.I. Joe Mutineers,
right?
Sort of posits the group as being at odds with the will of the cartoon, because I mean, when you're in this like Lego movie territory, when you penetrate into the domain of the Lego movie or of the like the branded authentic experience that
right.
is both like mediated through a cultural discourse and commercial discourse with a toy, but that is also your life, that is also real life, you know, that is you
right.
playing like a kid. When you enter into that, there is the kind of limitless possibilities of childlike free play are constrained somewhat by the cultural and commercial narrative of the toy and the discourses around the toy, right? It's like, and it's a different set of discourses with like My Little Ponies, I suppose, than with G.I. Joe's. It's sort of a different discourse with He-Man and G.I. Joe's. They're different sort of models of masculinity, or different models of harmless fantasy violence, right? And how they can
sort of affect your like fantastical play as a child. And so like what Jeff introduces is sort of death into Eden, but also
right.
he introduces dissent, right? He introduces the idea of being at odds with the prevailing narrative, you know, which is a kind of trope of like separating from the will of your parents or something like that, as a child or as a teenager or something like that. You're no longer part of the unit, the family unit, the military unit. You are you're a dissenter. You're a mutineer.
Well, and it is also kind of separating from the will of the advertising as well, of the way that you ought to play with these toys. And it actually, you know, in some ways, the way that we are, our G.I. Joes on the Crossfire board was a much more tame version of the way that, my brother and I, in the end, ended up playing with our action figures when we were kids, which is, you know, we had a lot of G.I. Joes, but we had the Ninja Turtles, and we had a wide range of different toys. We had my dad's big G.I. Joes from the, like, I guess from the 60s. Wow. And we'd bring them all out, right? And they would all be in play in narratives that maybe had some root in the G.I. Joe universe, but ultimately transformed. I actually think, and we would actually cassette record some of these. And so there may somewhere actually be cassette recordings of these like fantastical improvised set pieces that were, you know, again, grounded in some elements of, you know, I know some people who went so far as to really deface and maim their action figures, to take the heads off of their G.I. Joes or draw on them. And we didn't do that. We didn't like remove or disfigure them. So we didn't totally disembody them from their meaning, but based on what was inscribed on the plastic, you know, misread from there. And you see this happening throughout the in the commercials. It's really interesting is that what's happening through the, you know, Jeff's exertion of his will is changing the commercials, right? And that you have the mutineers and you have the, what is it, Jobra or something like that. And so that it really has this interestingly dreamlike quality of this has verisimilitude, right? That it is just like the commercial, but what Jeff is doing is imposing itself on this, right? And so it's an interesting way of dramatizing, you know, the way in which the actual act of play, you know, is not necessarily just at odds with, but kind of informs, the what was coming down from above, whether that's the authority of a corporation that's selling you this thing, or a kind of parental and authority, you know, just kind of authority in general. So whenever you and I are together, we talk about structure and agency. But I think that, or maybe it just so happens sometimes.
I can't help it if the world is full of nails.
Yeah, exactly. I just happen to have this very useful hammer, he said, swinging his arm over his head repeatedly.
It's a visual medium. One thing we could talk about is the relationship. I mean, you started a typology of pop culture bits on Community, right? And one is the Community world analog of a real world property, the way Kickpuncher is RoboCop, right?
Right. Right.
One is the homage that happens kind of on the narrative level that the characters aren't aware of, that they're invested in as their reality, like in the Meow Meow Beans episode and some of the sci-fi stuff. And then there's this where the bit is kind of supposed to be the expression, the externalization of a kind of internal state of the character. But I would say that this one is different from the Abed ones, from the claymation the Claymation Christmas episode, right? Like that
was... And the puppet episode too. Wasn't there a puppet episode? It was, I feel like that was an Abed one as well, but I could be mistaken.
The idea in that is that like that's, well, you know, now that I kind of piece it together, now that I'm kind of working out the details, maybe it's not that different because it's a sort of, it's a reaching for a mode of communication that's available as a response to a trauma, right? In Abed's case, like a family, like a psychological trauma, which is a loss of like family, his family's not visiting for Christmas or something. In Jeff's case, it's this, he drank a fifth of scotch and took a bunch of what pills that he got in Koreatown.
Like in Koreatown, yeah. Korean, like, anti-aging pills.
Right, of course, which, you know, maybe the less said about that, the better. But, right, like, takes pills to recover his youth. And the discourse available to him for talking about youth, for having an experience that has to do with youth, is G.I. Joe, right? Like, but it happens, only in his head, right? It's not shared with anyone in the way that in the Claymation episode, we are sort of, the camera is inside Abed's head because we're seeing the Claymation. And I suppose in the reality of the show, they're all sitting around the table, but they're all there. They all know what's going on. You know, they're all aware Abed is having a delusion and we're all sitting right around the table humoring him or something like that. This is like, this is sort of a private internal, you know, come to the light, unconscious experience that Jeff has that no one standing around his bed is really aware of. They're not, they're not participating in it actively in a different way.
Well, and we as a viewer aren't aware until about a third of the way in or even a little further of why this is happening, right? So that we start in G.I. Joe land, right? And there was a little bit where I'm like, oh, is this just – I mean, and you know, this is almost a mental you know, straw man, because I'm like, well, okay, are they just doing a G.I. Joe homage? And, you know, Community never just does a thing at this point. But the fact that you wonder that, and there's kind of a structural ghost ship moment, right? There's the moment where you realize, oh, this is – that you hear some people saying, Jeff, are you okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's me, Annie, it's me, Britta. And, you know, that's the moment where you say kind of clearly, oh, this is, something's happened to Jeff. There's some kind of internalization. Whereas if memory serves correctly, and I haven't watched the Abed episodes for a while, I think that it starts from the outside and goes in. But I don't know if that, I think that still puts those as variations on a type as opposed to different types, because I feel like that's more about, you know, it's at the level of kind of specific stylistic choices that kind of relate to characters, kind of, and what's being achieved with, right, with character.
Than, rather than being at the level of the basic conception of the sort of narrative device.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I was thinking about them as separate things, but as we put it together, it strikes me that you're right about that.
Yeah. I think one other interesting moment in terms of the people who are insane, right, or who are in prison and who are imprisoned, one of the people in G.I. Joe prison is and there are kind of the rejects of the G.I. Joe world is a sleep apnea guy who is Dan Harmon. So that brings us to our, like, this week's Dan Harmon in the ravioli moment. I wish we had, like, a graphic, right? Like, a graphic and a noise that came down that was, like, you know, it was, like, I'm envisioning like a Chef Boyardee logo, but with Dan Harmon's face, and it's on like a can of ravioli, and it just lowers down. Whenever we identify the point of a given episode in which Dan Harmon's in the ravioli.
Not that, but.
There it is, Dan Harmon's in the ravioli. And so I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting point because when I saw the physicality of the guy, I'm like, oh, that has to be Dan Harmon. And then I, in the credits, saw that it was him. And I don't know if there is anything more to that. I think then, like, so is this just Dan Harmon actually just physically inserting himself into the ravioli, or is there something meaningful about being, you know, Dan Harmon being essentially in the land of misfit toys, or in the land of rejected G.I. Joes, and in G.I. Joe prison? And what is that kind of possibly telling us?
Well, presumably Dan Harmon is sort of a criminal against G.I. Joe in the way that Jeff is by doing this to the celebrated children's property, right? Like he is, 'cause each of those people sort of represents a different threat to G.I. Joe. Like Jeff killed people, and that's how he and the crew got in there. So, you know, they must have killed people, right? Or Dan Harmon must have done something to land him in prison.
Well, I mean, right. And so, because Abed was also in prison,
right,
for kind of, again, for puncturing the reality.
Yeah. So these are people who are not allied with the, you know, with the sort of totalitarian regime of discourse, right?
Right. And then I think, though, because it's not even like, guys, wait, if that's true, then G.I. Joe means corporate America. Wake up, sheeple. It's the entertainment industrial complex. Don't you see that we're all being put in prison by shitty television and poopy television, and only sleep apnea man can rocket us out? I mean, and I don't mean to be like sarcastic about it, because it did achieve that. It was like really both, you know, it hit all of the quadrants, and not like demographic quadrants, but like it was like funny and smart and irreverent and mostly emotionally touching, right? All the kind of internal, is this like a good piece of television quadrants that like I kind of engage with. And so I feel like on the one hand, you know, I think that part of it being a Dan Harmon thing is that he can't help himself from saying, hey, guys, I did this, right? So he wants you to know that this is a thing that he is doing. This amazing feeling you are feeling, you know, he is courtesy of him and nobody else, right? It's a little bit of what – you know, and a lot of auteurs, either whether they're externally recognized or self-styled, have this way of putting themselves in various ways, whether it's, you know, I mean, I think about like Alfred Hitchcock appearing in his films, or, you know, these other stamps.
Or Chris Nolan casting Leonardo DiCaprio, who looks just like him.
Right. Right, exactly. So that there are these ways that this happens that sort of says, right? I mean, right? You know, this is a Dan Harmon joint, right? I might as well just say Community, a Dan Harmon joint.
Right.
And I think though that's part of the allure. I mean, all of the, well, I mean, it's interesting. Many of the shows that we talk about, and we've talked a little bit about Community as a recappable show, right? And Community as a show that's in this pantheon of shows that one talks about seriously, and it's the only, you know, half hour sitcom that's in that league. But we've, you know, throughout this season, you know, there's been a lot of, I mean, you guys talked about this, you and Mark talked about this last week as well, of the presence of showrunners, you know, showing up, you know, of Mitch Hurwitz showing up, of Vince Gilligan showing up, and David Cross, who was one of the showrunners of Mr. Show with Bob Odenkirk, just to close that loop that was left open, that, you know, that a lot of these strong TV shows do have this strong creative, you know, there's an author there, even though they're, you know, a given episode is directed or written by, you know, someone else. There is still this, you know, part of this moment is there is a sense of someone who is holding it all together. And so, you know, yeah,
the process for writing a lot of television, and this is not by all means exhaustive, and if you know more about this than I do, by all means sound off in the comments below this video or on the show notes for the audio podcast that you're listening to, is that the writers sit around a table and they do what's called breaking the stories, which is like deciding what's going to happen and breaking it down into beat by beat by beat and how they're going to interact and generally what the structure of the A, B, and C stories of episodes are going to be. It goes to one writer or writing team to actually flesh that out into a script. And then very often that gets kicked up the ladder to various levels, ending with, you know, if the showrunner is a writing person, or any with whoever is in charge of the writer's room, kind of putting the final tonal polish onto it. So you can imagine Dan Harmon being involved, though Dino Stamatopoulos, who plays Starburns, creative partner of Dan Harmon's, right, like, is credited as the writer of this episode. You can imagine him sort of hovering over all of the scripts. Their path to his doorsteps, and directors in television don't really have that much of a stamp to put on it, because again, the producers, the bosses tend to be writers, tend to come out of writing, and so even a director delivers a cut, but then that goes to the producer, and the producer sort of makes the kind of final decision about what's going to be in the episode. That was, by the way, one of the reasons why True Detective was so remarkable. It had one director for all of its 8 episodes and was able to accomplish a lot in terms of a more adventurous visual style,
right,
in terms of a director really putting a stamp on that whole suite, that whole experience, because when you're trying to conform to a house style, you know, it's like writing those like unsigned articles for the New Yorker when you're a television director, right? It's just the voice of the institution of the show.
Speaking, right, right, you know? Right.
As it were, visually.
Right, and that removes some space for authorship, right? And so, I mean, I think it is interesting that, yeah, I mean, we've talked about this a lot, that you don't get away from the Dan Harmon in the ravioli. And he is, on one hand, he is airing, you know, grinding some of his axes. I mean, I think the other thing that I remember from when Wingman and the Greendale crew is being sentenced in G.I. Joe court martial, you know, they're the things that are the charges that are being brought against them are things that someone could say about Community, right? And so, you know, that he's going to keep, on the one hand, he's going to keep grinding his axes, but it's not, and I think that this episode and really the stretch of this season shows that I think that what allows him to grind his axes is that he links them to the axe that each of us is carrying, right? That is not just this, it's not just the passion of Dan Harmon, you know, that, I really got crapped on and woe is me. And I'm going to narrow down all my vendettas. But rather he keeps, you know, he's putting his limited money where his mouth is, right? And keeps kind of finding interesting ways to both tell stories that, you know, connect emotionally and are really freaking funny and really, really clever.
Sure. Limited by the standards of network television, right? We could run over thinking it for the next 50 years on what one of these episodes costs, probably.
Yeah, Dan Harmon, think about that. Think about that. There are other creators out there, and we're not getting any younger.
Internet, making videos with Google Hangouts and podcasting them. You know? Well, hey, before we get canceled, maybe we should wrap up.
Or we just get a new team gets brought in to replace us, and we'll have a gas leak season of overthinking it.
That would be hilarious. What website would we get to do? Like, I think like Jezebel or something, you know, to get to.
We all have our.
Yeah, you don't want to call out. You don't want to call out Vulture.
Oh, I like Vulture.
Still want to write there one day?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So yeah, but if you would like to dive into the ravioli with it, it's, you know, it's interesting. That phrase has come to mean something different, something unique to these recaps other than what it originally meant, right? Like Pete meant that like the night after Dan Harmon, the night he found out that Dan Harmon got fired from Community, like the dinner he made did not taste as good. Because you can't separate out. It's about how things you care about sort of bleed into other areas of your life, and you can't silo out. But we mean something that's almost the inverse of that, or converse, one of them, where knowledge that you have about the means of production or about other things in the reality world, like not the cartoon world, not the commercial world, but the actual day-to-day world that you live in, can't help but affect your interpretation of a work of art, right? It's sort of set against the new critical model of criticism, which is that the sort of the work of art is a self-contained unit. It's a self-contained system of tensions, and you can describe those tensions in isolation. I keep like making, it's a visual medium, so if you're listening to this, I'm making a little box. I'm making a little.
What it looks like, what you are making looks like a raviolo.
I am making a round raviolo with my hands, with my head protruding through like the pillow of delicious filling.
Well, and I think there's the other thing here is that I think part of what that inverse does also is that, you know, I don't use ravioli for sustenance. Like the thing that is feeding me are these serialized TV shows, right? And that is my ravioli, right? So it's totally on the upside down. So it's not only is it that the direction of influence the way that it's going, but is that this is the TV show is more real than whatever I might be eating, or is as real, if not more real, and that it is as much of a necessity and a thing that it's, you know, it's that of what we're doing and how we kind of relate and connect. And I think that part of thinking of it that way is, you know, Community is a show that makes that argument, and that, you know, part through the character of Abed, who relates to people through pop culture, and then part in the way that it tells us stories. So yeah, that it is really, you know, really Dan, like, I mean, so actually the idea of Dan Harmon as Chef Boyardee is stand by, because, you know, each episode is a raviolo, and then it sits in the sauce of our society.
And that's interesting, right? Like, because that's just a fine metaphor for the move from like the new critical work of art as self-contained object to the post-structural model of like new historicism or deconstruction, where sort of everything is a text. They're all texts interacting, you know, interconnected with one another, right? Differing and deferring meaning, right, onto one another, and they're all just ravioli in the same jar of Prego. Well,
and sometimes the ravioli stick to each other, and you peel them apart, and one ruptures, and the ricotta stuffing gets out, and it all mixes out, and the filling becomes sauce, and the what's outside becomes inside, and we're all getting old and we're going to die.
Well, on that cheery note, if you have something you want to add to the discussion, leave a comment below. Whether you're on YouTube or on Overthinking It. If you would like to subscribe to these recaps, you can do so. Go to overthinkingit.com, and there on every recap post, there will be a link to subscribe to the audio podcast in iTunes or as an RSS feed in whatever podcatcher you happen to use. You can also subscribe to the YouTube channel, which is also linked there. I do that big song and dance about that because... actually, before the next community recap, there will be a Game of Thrones recap, which is our most popular series that we talk about on Overthinking It. So make sure you are in a position to automatically download all of your Game of Thrones overthinking coming up. And you'll also find on the podcast feed for this the How I Met Your Mother finale recap with Matt Belenke and Ben Adams. So if you want that, you can find that in this sequence as well. Just a few more episodes to go in this season of Community, so we'll wind those down. Thanks, Ryan, for joining me on this. We'll be back next week. Until then, visit us on the web at Overthinking It, where we can all subject all the ravioli to a level of scrutiny it probably doesn't
deserve.